Hey everyone, it's Noah Barnett, the VP of Marketing here at Feather. And today in the studio, as always, I have Nu Tay, the content strategist and also the curator of Feather's Good Marketing Brief. Hi, Nu. How are you?
Good. I'm doing good. How are you, Noah?
I am grand. There's such a weird dichotomy in Phoenix where it's really cold, like desert cold, but not super cold compared to what everyone else is doing. And so you have like the heat on in your house, but then it like breaks 75 outside, but it's still cold inside. It's like a weird flip. So I've been freezing all day, but like it's 70 some degrees outside and I don't know why. And so it's like maybe our AC unit's messed up or something,
but
we're in this transition period.
You're not getting enough sun through your windows.
Maybe
that's why I get cold. If it's like warm outside and it's like cool in the house, it's because I'm not getting enough sunlight.
Well, I could always use more sunlight. So if you're inviting me to take a vacation, I'll make sure HR knows. Nu approved this vacation.
So. I did.
She said I needed more sun. What's going on in Philly right now? How are things in Philly?
Things are good. Philly is fine. It's gray and it's raining all week. But it's like warmer than usual. It's usually in like the 30s. Now it's in like the mid 40s. So
yeah,
getting toasty. It's getting toasty over here.
Oh man, I'm not going to complain about my weather anymore. Every time we compare it to like, I think even New York's getting like dumped on this week with rain and cold. So everything's going fine here. It is spring training season, which I know we talked about in a previous brief. Been seeing a lot of energy and action around spring training and all of that. Even down to, I guess there's this like, I don't know how much you follow baseball, but I guess there's this like New Jersey, not New Jersey, like New Jersey, but like a new jersey design for this year's baseball teams. And it's like high performance, supposed to be this really cool thing, but like players hate it. It looks awful. And like there's kind of this dichotomy between like performance and perception.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's something there for marketers to learn that like even though it's supposedly better and higher quality for the players, the perception is it's lower quality and kind of taking away the like tradition of baseball uniforms and kind of the stitching and like all of this stuff.
Oh, I see.
And so there's something to learn there for marketers between like performance and perception.
Yeah. I think it's definitely something to consider, especially if it's like a change, right? If something you've been doing something for a long time and it's like a big change, and they just need to give more education about it, I guess. Maybe the players weren't forewarned.
Yeah.
You know?
Or it gets into like, even if it is the right thing, it doesn't mean it's the right thing for right now, or maybe not the next best step. It's like we should have taken like a half step towards higher performing jerseys, then went kind of the further step, like when it's more transformational, there's like questions about it. Like it actually incurs more questions.
It feels different too. It feels different on their skin and the way they carry themselves. So
yeah,
something to look into.
It's wild. There's a lot of, I'm going to explore this further. We're going to have to dig into this on a future good marketing brief. But in the interim, as always, we dig into this week's good marketing brief, which was not on perception versus performance. What was this week's topic for the good marketing brief, Nu?
It was about a couple of things. The overarching theme is we talked about peer-to-peer last week, and I wanted to kind of like transition into events. But I kind of opened this brief by talking about this little floozy that happened with Wendy's. I don't know if you read about it.
Oh, Wendy. What did she do?
What did she do? On a fourth quarter earnings call, their CEO was introducing the concept of dynamic pricing for these digital menu boards that they're trying to kind of roll out. And the public perceived it as, oh, they're going to charge you more depending on like the time of day if it's super busy, kind of like Uber's surge pricing when it's like a busy time of the night. There's not enough drivers, surge pricing. It didn't go well. And they got a lot of like pushback from the public. And so they kind of like backtracked and say, oh, that's not what we meant. We just meant that like during the slower times of day, we give people discounts. So they kind of backtrack that way. And I mean, it was just like a nightmare, a PR nightmare. And so for nonprofits, I think it's just like a good example of like being very clear with your messaging and making sure it doesn't get perceived a different way, kind of like perception.
Yeah.
And then just like don't test, like don't do anything to kind of harm the trust between yourself and your supporters. I think that should be the first thing you think about if you're making any kind of decision, rolling out a new campaign, offering new ways to support, making sure whatever you do, you're staying authentic and genuine to your mission.
Yeah, 100%. There is something interesting about that too, from like the upcry of being about equity and like, hey, are you going to charge people different things? And there's so many
Absolutely.
industries that do this already. Like you mentioned Uber, but like airlines, hotels, all sorts of industries have this variable-based pricing based on demand. Actually acts more like, if you think about the stock market, like if a stock's in high demand, like the supply and demand. Why are there specific things we don't do that? And I think as I applied it to like nonprofits, let's say specifically nonprofits that are fundraising, like we make asks that are dynamic to different people based on what we think we could get from one person versus another. And it's not this like equitable pricing. So what was it about the Wendy's thing? And we don't have to answer this. This is just something that I'm curious about, is like, what about like a fast food restaurant's pricing that we're all of a sudden like upset about,
I
but
think
they're going
like
to try to
for
optimize
me,
this?
I did think about this and I'm like, all right, you know, there's some things that are we're okay with and we'll pay extra for. But I think for like a fast food place, it's supposed to be affordable, right? And it's supposed like everyone is supposed to be able to go and enjoy the food, no matter if you're like really wealthy or like you don't have as much of a budget. And I think that was the mark, and I think that them trying to add this layer of like kind of challenging people who don't have as much equity, I think that is what got the most pushback, in my opinion, because I didn't think about
No,
it
that's
as I was
fair.
writing out this brief.
Yeah, it is an interesting topic of like, what, yeah, when can you use something, when shouldn't, could you use something but you shouldn't use something, and how does that work? And how we think about like dynamic asks, or even like when is personalization bad? I guess when it's not in the benefit of the end user, maybe.
I think what's interesting is that with dynamic ask, it's not you have you still have an option, right? Yeah, you have these like asks, these buckets, but then there's still that like empty bar that says like or choose your own amount. So I think it works for nonprofits to offer that because now they're like you're like offering ranges versus just one set price.
Yeah. You're still giving agency to the individual to make their decision, and leaving openness for variance. Yeah. No, that's really powerful. It's a very interesting case study. I'm curious to dig into that one further and how it applies to
I thought it was really
nonprofits.
cool.
You mentioned this week's brief being really around events. How did the brief kind of touch on how events are evolving in 2024 and how you can maybe stand out to promote your events this year?
It's events are coming back. So we're in spring now, so this is a very heavy event time where people are kind of fine-tuning what their strategies are looking like and about to kick off all of these peer-to-peer events and endurance events and all that. And Nonprofit Pro actually published a pretty cool thing, an article that kind of basically wrapped up some key learnings from the P2P forum that was here in Philly 2 weeks ago, I believe. And I mean, I love events because it's just another way, as we talk about engagement and this attention economy in digital, it's just like so difficult to connect with people at certain times. But when we're thinking about experience, events are just a great way to bring everyone together around a common cause. And you can bring people who are like your super supporters who actually love your mission and maybe they're impacted by it. Someone they love is impacted, so they're supporting it on behalf of their loved ones, or it could have been like an activity interest, right? I know that like people who love to run 5Ks maybe don't have a connection to your mission, but they'll sign up because they love to do marathons and they love to run. But it's a way to bring them in and kind of expand and acquire new supporters because you know, you're offering them something of worth, which is that experience, but then you can bring them in by kind of sharing the story, really trying to connect with them and sharing them the why behind why your mission is so important. I think it's a great acquisition tool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think even on the flip side too, it's a great opportunity for building community or cultivating community amongst your mm-hmm. supporter base too. Like, I think this mm-hmm. idea of nonprofits being not just, and we talked about this a lot last week too, not just a transaction, like I'm giving to you and you're doing something and that's great. Mm-hmm. It's actually a mm-hmm. communal thing that often is left to like being done in private, like I'm giving privately, but there is an element of like, hey, I support something and you support something that might increase my care for the cause because I have community and connection with people that are like-minded and we're working collaboratively to drive impact. And I think events are both virtually and in person are a way to solidify that community or continue to like spark those collisions amongst your member base, which I think also mm-hmm. generates accountability. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know about you, but like groups that I've been a part of where I feel like people know what I'm missing. Or like people expected me, hey, are you coming to the donor impact event next week? It's like, oh, crap. I know the org asked me to go.
But now the pressure.
But I was going to go under the radar and like not volunteer this week or, you know, not volunteer this month. But it's like, no, but James, my good friend who also supports this cause, is now holding mm-hmm. me accountable and noticing I'm not there when I usually am.
Yeah.
Deepens my connection, not in the form of guilt, but I think accountability. And I think accountability is something that nonprofits can actually tap into a lot more, and we should probably explore that further in another episode.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I think events are great for that very reason, because there's just so many layers to it, right? You know, we talked about acquisition layer. We talked about this experience layer, retention. It's a great way to retain existing supporters because you're offering them new experiences, a way to bond and connect. But then, yeah, making friends right within the community and having them keep you accountable and kind of attend and participate in these kind of community building activities. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think building on that, the other thing you talked about in this week's brief was influencer marketing, or kind of how organizations can use influencer marketing, even beyond the peer-to-peer resources you shared last week. Could you talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah, so there's a couple resources. One was the peer-to-peer one where, you know, you can use influencers as ambassadors, but that's just not only for events. One of the things that I shared is that LinkedIn, you know, I think LinkedIn has traditionally been like the boring social media platform for like business professionals, and there wasn't so much activity on it until like a few years ago. I think once LinkedIn kind of released their creator tools, mm-hmm. people within companies, within organizations could become these thought leaders, right? Building out their platform, building out their community. And we're actually seeing more influencers like Corporate Natalie. I don't know if you've ever seen her like TikToks or Instagrams, but she does these like parodies of like corporate, like working in corporate America as a millennial. So the different perspectives between like breaking down those toxic environments, but in like a funny way. And so influencers like that are coming onto LinkedIn, working with brands to engage now working professionals who are like Gen Z, millennials who are coming into their workforce, are a little more active on LinkedIn because they're looking for new opportunities. They're looking to network with people in their industry, or they're trying to build out their brand. And so we're seeing a lot more activity on LinkedIn through influencers. And I think influencer marketing is, even though we talked about it a lot and it's like this cool new thing, I do think it's the feature of marketing, because these are people who have tons of followers, right? People trust them. They identify with them. And so they're going to take whatever they recommend, whatever they support, with a lot of heart because they trust them. And so I think there's just going to be a lot more opportunities for nonprofits to find these relationships with influencers. And I actually shared a podcast with We Are For Good, with John and Becky, and they talked a little bit about how to find how to start, right? I think a lot of nonprofits, even on that webinar with, you know, you, John, and I, people are like, well, where do we start? How do we find these influencers? And one of the things they said is like, you can actually comb through your supporter base and see if there are any existing supporters who might be content creators or have a larger following, and kind of start there.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, we talked about this too on that same webinar you're referencing, where influencers don't always look like a corporate Natalie or, you know, some big YouTuber or some artist or celebrity. Like, influencers could be that you have a donor that gives to you that actually runs like the parent association of an entire state, and you have no idea that that's happening. And so sometimes often too, it's like, ask how people want to get involved through advocacy programs, and you might be surprised what levers of influence your current loyal supporters already have to really be able to drive your cause forward. I was just leading a training session on member engagement, this idea that, like, how do you actually use current members to help engage future members, and how that's different than maybe acquiring members yourself, because you need to think like an enabler and an activator and a coach, not the campaign orchestrator. Yeah. And so it's a different mindset you have to put yourself in as well that I think is really important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Anything else of note this week in the Good Marketing Brief?
There's a lot of good stuff in here. I guess there was that conversation with you and Jonathan on, I resurfaced it. It was a Good Marketing Unplugged episode, how to kind of keep your audience engaged. And it's, I know you guys talked about creating a safe space to like provide opportunities to do more things with the organization outside of just an ask. And I thought that was an interesting conversation. I think people should really check it out. I think there was a lot of nuggets of wisdom that I pulled from that, but also Jonathan was so transparent. And I love it when people come on a podcast or a webinar and talk about some of the failures that they had within campaigns, the ones that didn't hit very well. And the one thing that he mentioned is that they ran a campaign where they didn't have an ask because they just wanted to build awareness around their mission, but it didn't hit home very hard. And his biggest learning was like him and his team, they didn't kind of set that why. Why should people care? Why is this an important cause? And I thought it was just a great transparent conversation.
Yeah, for sure. Well, as always, encourage you to check out the full Good Marketing Brief, which is linked in the comments or in the show notes. If you're not subscribed to the Good Marketing Brief, make sure you subscribe, because each and every Wednesday, you'll see the curated resources that New puts together that's going to help you wade through the week and continue to navigate this kind of changing world of marketing. New, thanks for joining me today, as always, and we'll do it again next week.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.